dear listeners. This is Basement Gaming episode 65. My name is Herb, and I'm joined by my dear cousin Brigham.
Why, hi there.
So this episode, Brigham and I are doing another side mission. This week, we're interviewing a self-proclaimed casual gamer, and we find out what makes him tick. Please welcome Brigham's brother-in-law and one of my favorite cousin-in-laws, Mr. Alec Anderson.
I am your favorite cousin-in-law, right? Hey, everybody. How's it going?
If you enjoy the show, please give us a follow on your favorite podcast listening app of choice and on Twitter at BasementGaming9 to stay up to date with new episodes. With formalities out of the way, welcome to Basement Gaming. Hello, hello, boys.
Another week.
Little family reunion we got going on here. First family member on the podcast. I'm excited.
Yeah, last week made history with the first guest, and now we're making more history with the first other family member, like you were saying.
Yeah. So, Alec, how do you feel, man? We're here. This is your first podcast appearance, I'm guessing. Have you been on another podcast?
First podcast ever, and I'm very into podcasts. So it's nice to, I'm excited to listen to myself after this and give myself some critiques, really more than anything.
You're going to hate it. Trust me. Brigham, yeah. Have you gotten used to hearing your own voice yet?
I hate it. I'm like my own worst critic too. I listen back to our episodes and sometimes I can't even finish them. It's just, yeah.
It's like, this is how I speak all the time?
This exactly. Like this, yeah. People have to tolerate this all the time? Wow.
All right. Thanks. Let's stop feeling bad for ourselves now and let's learn about Alec. Alec, go ahead and just tell us a little bit about yourself and your gaming history, what gaming meant really to you while you were growing up, and just some of your favorite gaming memories, really, your favorite games, your favorite game consoles. Tell the people who you are.
Sure. So, really quick, right now, I am currently working in finance out in New York. Been here for about 5 years, and we'll figure out what's next, but it's been a good time so far. But as far as gaming, I got to go back to my the game that really broke it out for me, which was Pokemon, of all things, when I was younger. Got a blue version when I was probably back in 1999, so I was 6 or 7. And all the kids on my street were playing it. All the kids had the trading cards. I still distinctly remember getting the cheat on the side of Cinnabar Island where you could get unlimited Master Balls, at which point I realized, what's the point in even playing this anymore because I've already finished it. I've been gaming. I am self-proclaimed a casual gamer because I really am super niche into the things that have picked up my attention. I think, I played Super Mario 64, Mario Kart, was very into the Nintendo 64, and picked up Super Smash Bros. I should probably point out I'm very heavy on the Nintendo side.
Yeah.
That's what you like when you're between the ages of 6 and 12, and when I got older, my friends started playing Halo, and I got an Xbox, and the shooters were fun. I never really got too into them because I feel like the only time anyone was playing was at 2 in the morning, and I just enjoyed my sleep. But my Call of Duty of choice was World at War in 2011, and was
Dark
probably
Horse.
The only one I ever was, even moderately competitive in. And the game, I'll end with this. The game that means the absolute most to me is NBA Live 2005. I'll tell you why. When I was probably 12 at the time, I was a bit of a chunky kid. I didn't get out much, didn't like to really do anything. Outside of playing on the computer like Roller Coaster Tycoon or on the Nintendo. And my mom got me this game she thought might introduced me to, you know, doing other things outside of game, which I love. I love playing games, but NBA Live 2005 got me really interested in basketball, which I was terrible at, but I knew all the stats. And for the first time, and I think a long time, I feel like I connected with a lot of people kind of outside my little niche group of friends, just being able to talk shop on random things that I was playing in my game. And I think it, for me, that bridged the connection between, you know, gamers and people that don't spend a lot of time with games, and that there's really a lot of things that you can find in common. So a little bit about me, a little bit of here, a little bit of there, heavy Nintendo, love me some repetitive basketball games, still buy them every year, even though they're not changed. And most recently purchased the new Pokemon game, which I was very obsessed with, and grateful to my wife for giving me the weekend to play it. Stop there.
Great.
I mean, it's really interesting to hear from the perspective of a quote unquote casual gamer what you end up latching onto, and it seems like from a lot of my experiences, a lot of people just latch onto Nintendo games because they're the most accessible and the most wide range in terms of audience. What do you think, Brew?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think that Nintendo games also just have that nostalgia factor, you know, like those IPs. We've all seen them since we were kids, the Mario, Pokemon. Like, Alec, you know, you were just talking about how Pokemon Blue was like the first game that you can remember like playing, getting really into. I remember Pokemon Red being very similar to me. And, you know, those kind of games transcend just a normal like hardcore gamer because everybody played those games. So to your point too, Herb, like those games are so wide spanning in the type of audience that, yeah, just it's able to hit everyone. But at the same time, I think Nintendo does a better job than other companies in keeping their IPs relevant for such a long period of time that, you know, the games that kids are able to play when they're a kid, even whenever they're adults, or they continue making new games with that IP, and it hits a nostalgia factor, and people will continue buying them even if they're not super into video games as a whole.
What consoles did you have growing up, Alec? If you had NBA Live 2005, I'm guessing you had a PS2, right?
I had a PS2. Well, it's funny because I didn't know really what I wanted. I had a Nintendo 64, like I said, had a GameCube when that came out, and probably when I was 11 or 12, for really no reason other than I felt like everyone thought they were cool, I told, you know, Santa I wanted a PS2. And I think I told a mall Santa that, and I feel like my parents were kind of like, what? That's never been something you showed interest in. And, you know, so they ended up getting us Santa ended up getting us a PS2. For our young listeners, at the that Christmas, and I think they got me like Jack and Daxter and this NBA game.
Yep.
And yeah, I remember playing through it. I think I played Jack and Daxter to level 2, and I couldn't get past this point. And I sat there. I probably put 30 hours into a single level, and then I quit.
There's no way, man. Jack and Daxter is not that bad.
It seemed like it was going to be a really fun game, but I just couldn't figure it out. And it was before I realized I could go on the internet and just see what I was not doing right. So I was, and my little brother was playing it with me too, and we're just like, we just can't do this anymore. So we played the NBA game. I also, after that, I should finish the question. I had an Xbox 360 and a Wii we had growing up. And then that was the last console that I owned before I bought a Switch after college. So I didn't have a console between ages 18 and 25.
Wow. Where gaming season, really.
Yeah, crazy, huh?
Yeah. What was it about the Nintendo Switch that got you to make the jump and decide that you wanted to get that?
It's so funny, but there's a reason why they did it. The Super Smash Bros. Game, which that was a game, I mean, haven't even talked about all the games that I've loved in my life, but Super Smash Bros. Had a really special place for me too. Going back to the early days of the N64 and playing it in high school, and that was a game that was cool no matter who you were. You know, if you didn't like Super Smash, you were not, you know, were you even a human being? And so I had friends, and with the more or less terrible Wi-Fi connection on the Switch, you know, living in New York, it's like, let's buy Switches and play Smash, and that's how we'll catch up. And so we did. And that's kind of how that started. We got a Switch and played Smash, and that Christmas, I think Brigham actually got me an NBA 2K game as well, which I also played, and yeah, so that was really it. It was Super Smash. Uh-huh. That's why I bought the Switch.
Okay, that's cool.
It's so funny to me because I'm just so different. My gaming upbringing went away from Nintendo mostly because I wasn't really into Pokemon, because that was a big thing for me growing up was Pokemon, because I had Nintendo Advance and I had Nintendo. I had all the Nintendo handhelds, essentially, but I never really liked any of the games on them. Like, the biggest things on them were Pokemon, and I remember I probably talked about this early on in the podcast episodes, the Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets for the Nintendo Advance or whatever, or Nintendo, one of the Nintendo handheld games. That's like one of the most memorable games I played on a Nintendo handheld device, and it's just so interesting to hear how you just latched on to the Nintendo IPs. And I was just like, I couldn't care less about almost any of this. Almost none of my memories of growing up gaming really revolves around Nintendo, except for like a little bit of Mario Kart, I guess. I don't know. It's just, I'm fascinated already, bro.
Well, yeah. You know, it's funny that you say that just with the Nintendo IPs, because what is Super Smash Bros. Than just an amalgamation of all their IPs, and all of a sudden you care a ton about things you've never heard of.
And even then, I wasn't that onto Smash. That's another thing. I was never that into Smash.
Different strokes.
Yeah. I don't know. PS2, the PlayStation IPs just grabbed onto me. You know, I was all about Jak and Daxter and Sly Cooper, and eventually way later on, obviously, freaking the Uncharted series. And I just remember a lot of single player adventure games that Sony is just known for and very popular for. So that's kind of how my gaming career went through until I hit college and started playing more and more FPS and competitive games so I could play, you know, with fellow gamers, fellow friends. But yeah. How about you, Brigham? How does his, like, growing up with games compared to you?
Yeah, I feel like in a lot of ways it's similar at the start. Like, games like Pokemon, all those kind of Nintendo games were always very popular, like, in my friend circle. And I think, for me at least, the games I remember growing up playing were typically just the games that all my other friends were playing. So I remember I had a PlayStation 2, and all my friends had Xboxes, and I was, like, the odd man out that didn't play Halo. Until I finally got an Xbox and was able to play Halo with everybody. And then, so yeah, I was just like, I think for me, it was those kind of Nintendo games. And then once I started getting older and all my friends started to play more multiplayer games, like Alec was saying, same with his friend group, they're playing Call of Duty and stuff like that. I got into those games as well and was super into social games. So like Halo, then Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 was another really big game in my friend circle. And then, you know, obviously World of Warcraft, which we've talked about a lot in this episode, on this podcast. But I think once World of Warcraft came out and then I made friends within that game, that's kind of been like the thread that's continued on through. Even to this day, there are moments in life where I just don't play that many other video games. But the games I do play are the ones that I can play with friends. And so I think the social aspect for me in my gaming has always been a huge part in the kind of games I play and how much into gaming I am at that point in my life. But I also want to ask Alec too, you know, you're talking a bit about the basketball game and NBA 2K. And I always find it so interesting that there are so many people who don't play a ton of video games, but they will play those sports games. Like Madden's a really big one, right? I remember when I was at GameStop and I used to work at GameStop, and whenever the new Madden came out, like almost everybody from like the University of Virginia football team would come in and buy that game. And it was the first and last time I would ever see any of those people. like that was the only game that they played. And I always found it so interesting that these like sports strategy games were so popular among people who didn't normally play games. And a lot of times I feel like the hardcore gamers, they're into all these different types of games except for the sports games. So Alec, I just kind of wanted to know from your perspective, what is it about these like sports, these like strategy, these sports simulation games is so popular for people who aren't super into games as a whole?
I think I'm going to say something profound, but if it's not, you can edit it out later. What is gaming if it's not projecting what you want to see about yourself in some way or another? You know, I think for me, I've always been pretty narrative driven. When I was little, I liked playing with toys, creating things, building like cities and stuff, naming the streets after people I knew, stuff like that. So you have a group of people maybe that are, you know, their whole life are sports. You know, you play football growing up. That's all you're doing. You come home from school, you play football, you exhaust yourself. You come home, you eat, and you go to sleep. You don't do your homework and do the same thing over again, you know? And so when a chance comes to have a game where you can have a creative outlet that's mixed with all that you know, that makes perfect sense to me that you'd want to play it. And you see NBA players playing these games so they can be themselves, right? And they can, and all these games have create a player, you insert yourself in. I think in a Madden game, I was the NFL's all-time leading reception or receiving touchdown catches for, you know, I was the MVP as a wide receiver, which I think is extremely unheard of, but because I caught so many touchdowns in that game. So it's a, I don't know. I think I would say it's a projection. You know, people find games that they see themselves in or they want to see themselves in. Or maybe that's just one way to think about it.
I guess to piggyback off of that, I have seen that way where you're saying people just, if that's what their main hobby is in real life, they'll be more likely to go back to it in a gaming sense. Because, you know, we have a cousin that we brought up in this podcast a couple of times that he played football when he was in high school. So he's been around football his entire life. So Madden is his number one game that he's always played year after year, you know? So, I mean, we can move on this conversation to what's gaming for you now, I'd say. Because let's say Brigham and I, we both have our games that we always go back to. It doesn't matter how stale or how exciting the gaming landscape is at any point. I have League of Legends that I go back to and play with my friends all the time. And Brigham has World of Warcraft that he'll always have that fallback, you know. What is that fallback for you? Is that NBA 2K? Is it Pokemon games or something on the Switch? What do you play the most now that you probably have a lot less time to play, because we didn't mention this before, you are married and you have a child. So
yeah.
Time is of the essence.
I you know, it's funny. It's hard to find time, you know. Life gets busy, but there's something about playing a game that is sometimes just a relief or a period of relaxation that you just, it just kind of clears your mind. And, you know, the fallback game for me, and again, I haven't even mentioned this, so call me a casual gamer, but I certainly have a repertoire of games that I always go back to. But the Civilization games on the computer. And they're basically like advanced board games, right? Where you are playing turn-based games, building things with very complex rules. And for me, like as a dad and sitting at a computer all day for work right now from home, you know, it's kind of an easy thing to kind of turn on and you know, get through a game. You can stop it at any time and kind of resume back in. And it's that's always been for me something I can fall back to. And one last thing I'll say is it's kind of tough to get too connected to a Pokemon game because they're pretty much all the same. Like once you beat it, it's kind of like, I don't want to play that again. But yeah. I want to play the next one with like slightly new features, you know, and kind of roll your eyes a little bit. But yeah, for me, it's the city building game or it's the civilization building strategy type board game on the computer that, you know, I usually can fall back to and can spend hours playing, honestly. When there's time.
Right? Do you have any, Bergman, I know you have some memories of Zootopia or Roller Coaster Tycoon back in the day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still play games. Planet Coaster, which is the spiritual successor of Roller Coaster Tycoon. Yeah, definitely. I always, those kind of like games, I played Civilization a little bit when I was a kid. That game, I remember playing it at a friend's house. And it was just like so advanced. I just couldn't comprehend what was going on. I feel like if I like sat down with a tutorial, I'd be able to get it. But yeah, no, I could totally see that game being the kind of game that you go back to and play, you know, throughout the years just because it's so timeless.
And do you find that like, Alec, do you find you're really sticking to like the strategy games, just things that are like pretty low key? I mean, are you big into The Sims? Anything like that? I know your wife is.
My wife loves The Sims. I swore off The Sims because it was too close to real life.
So that's too close. Okay.
A little too close. A step removed where you're not controlling the lives of people, you know, is good enough for me. But the strategy simulation type games, like, you know, I play a game like a City Skylines and I think, man, like, it could have been cool to be a city planner. You know, why didn't I think of that when I was earlier? Or you play a game like Civilization, you think, man, this is so intricate. Like, you know, there's so many ways that you can play this game. Like, no two games are going to be the same. And there's something about the replayability of a game like that that kind of just draws me in. And it's a release.
It's interesting you say replayability because especially multiplayer games, a lot of multiplayer games are pretty replayable. Because especially if you're playing against other players, that's what makes it replayable because no two game is the same because you're rarely playing against the same person, you know? Unless you're playing custom games with your friends, in which case, yeah, it's one place, you know? It's fun to play with your friends, play one-on-one, 2K with them from time to time. But whenever you play online, you know, it's like a different player every time. So the experience is vastly different. So I'm a bit surprised that you didn't say 2K because it feels like that's a easy one to just pop in. It's like, all right, let me just play a game, you know? But it makes sense when you put it in the context of, like, maximum relaxation. It's like, okay, let me just sit and play it for a little while.
Yeah, it's funny. The way that I look at 2K is almost more like you look at an adventure game, believe it or not.
Interesting.
You know, you create a player and you play him through the story mode, and or you create a franchise. Like, I am a big jazz fan, right? Love the Utah Jazz. One of the few people in the world that says that.
There are dozens of us.
at least dozens, especially where I live. You know, you go to the Jazz Knicks game, you see like three jerseys, and you're like, oh, you probably grew up where I grew up. Anyway, you create your player, you play like 15 seasons, and you simulate most of the games because you get sick of actually playing the game, and then it's done. You know, but so for me, like, I don't actually like playing the actual basketball game as much as I like playing the management of the franchise and going through, which is basically very similar to,
I guess my next question would be it's twofold. As your son Beck grows up, do you see yourself either playing more as he gets older, you know, and you have to spend a little less time making sure he's not killing himself in the corner, and you have a little bit more time maybe to yourself. Do you see yourself playing games a little bit more? Because I have friends that have kids, and as their kids grow older, I am noticing, oh, they're playing a little bit more games. They're getting online a little bit more because they have like slightly, ever so slightly more time because, you know, they do want to spend time with their children. That makes sense. And, I guess the second part of it is, do you see yourself, are you seeing any interest from him into like the video game world? Because I have a lot of nieces and they started showing interest very early on. Like, my brother with his oldest, I remember he would be playing computer games and his oldest would just be sitting on his lap and she would just watch him play League of Legends and she would just be like mesmerized by it. And from that point on, I just knew she would like games. And lo and behold, she has a Switch of her own. She plays Fortnite. She's into all the kid games you would think a kid would be into. So do you see that in your future?
I'm jealous of that experience. I would like to have a relationship with my son where we have games in common, you know, or where I show him something. I think I'm looking forward to playing games like Super Smash Bros. With him. You know, it's interesting because I'll have conversations with my wife about, you know, how do we want to present gaming to our kids, right? Because they're going to be exposed to it anyway by virtue of being alive. So
under a rock.
Yeah, I mean, some parents take the approach where they take a hard line and say, no, you're not going to play that. But, you know, then they go over to a friend's house and they just play it all night, right? And you know, there has to be some sort of balance, right? And there's a lot of good that can come from gaming, especially like the communities that you can build, relationships online with your friends, real life friends and friends that you meet. And so anyway, short answer to the question, I would love to find, you know, things that he's interested in and to participate in that with him. And I'm really just kind of figuring out as we go, you know, if he takes an interest, great. If he doesn't, I don't think I'm going to like force him to sit in front of a TV, you know, and to play. Yeah, I highly doubt that will be the case. I don't know a kid that doesn't love screen time, but, you know, just trying to solve for all solutions. But I do think as he gets older, you know, that it could be something I do. I've already found that playing a game is a great way to stay in contact with people that you just couldn't otherwise, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah. I value relationships and sometimes find a hard time carving out time to connect with everybody that I haven't seen in years. So it's kind of nice getting everyone into a party or a Discord chat and being able to just talk, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's funny. I think back, like recently, I've been thinking about this a lot. Like the people I keep up with, the friends I stay in touch with back all the way to high school, it's because like we play the same games and like we talk to each other through these games, whether it's like World of Warcraft or like, I don't know, Diablo or New World or whatever game we're playing. Like it's kind of like it ends up becoming just like a facilitator for us to have time, set aside some time to hang out, you know, even after all these years and even after people moving and living on opposite sides of the country. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, we've brought up in nauseam how easy it is for us to keep up with our friends because of games. I mean, sometimes I'll log on to voice chat and I'm not even playing. I'll just be sitting there talking to them. Sometimes they're playing a game, sometimes they're not, and we're just hanging out, you know, and like hanging out on a Friday night. And that sounds ridiculous to people sometimes. Just like, why don't you guys go out and do things? Like, we're just close to the game, you know? Like, we could always just pop into a game if we want to. Maybe we don't want to right now. Maybe someone's eating and they're just eating at the computer, or someone's about to go somewhere and just like hanging out for a little bit before we go. And yeah, I mean that was part of my question, Alec, is just like, do you see yourself playing more in the future? And I know you built a computer recently, so you're making steps, man.
I did build a computer. I was super proud of that. That's one of those things I always wanted to do. At a minimum to say that I would do it, but to your point, yeah, it's a step to, you know, being more available and open in that sense. And yeah, I it all depends on my ability to balance work and life. And honestly, because gaming has been such a nice outlet for me, like it's something I am sure I'm going to need to increase more going forward.
You got two people here that'll guide you through the harsh lands of gaming. We haven't given up on you yet.
Yep. I have a few just rapid fire questions I want to ask you, Alec. These are more just kind of like your take on different really popular talking points within the gaming industry. things that, you know, I know hardcore gamers have an opinion of, but I always kind of wonder, what do casual gamers think of this? So the question is just the console wars. So, you know, console wars, PlayStation versus Nintendo versus Xbox. What's your take on this? Like, do you care at all? Like, do you have an, and I mean, I know like you have a Nintendo, so like that's kind of like where you have to, you know, if you had to draw the line somewhere, you'd pick Nintendo. But like, is the console wars thing like a huge deal to you? Like, are you caring about what each console is doing, or do you really just care about as long as you have the console, as long as you can play your NBA 2K on the console, you're good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I mean, to me, the difference, and this has been consistent for a long time, like the difference I see between all three of them, or four if you, you know, include like PC, is really just what content there is on each. And it, you know, and all the companies are trying to keep their scarce resources and, you know, prevent other companies from being able to play their games. Like, I wonder if it would be better for everybody if there was interplayability between all of them. But I mean, that's the point of having competing companies, right? Try to create content that are better than others. So I would, you know, to your point, I'd pick Nintendo if I had to, just based on what I've been interested in so far. But I mean, you have things like the PS5 that can do everything and basically cook you breakfast as well, you know? So it's, I mean, I don't know. I wish that there was like, I don't know what Nintendo's strategy is, or maybe they just focus on kids and I'm just a sucker for it, because I know that the machine's not super high quality, but
yeah. Well, I mean, it's pretty high quality.
Yeah. it's out there.
Yeah.
Oh, it is? Oh, okay, good. All right. Yeah. I know that hasn't always, as you can tell, casual gamer here.
No, all good. Yeah. And Nintendo, the Switch is outselling the PS5 and the Series X. So in terms of like, I guess, numbers, you can say that they're winning, but for sure. So the next question I had to ask was microtransactions. Do you care about microtransactions in video games? Do you like them, hate them, or just not care at all?
Like pay to play, right? Like having, or like,
yeah, just like, and yeah, Fortnite. Exactly. It's like, yeah, cosmetic skins within the game. I think, I don't know if NBA has, I know if FIFA has like cards you can purchase.
Yeah. FIFA, well, definitely. I mean, I don't know about NBA.
It is brilliant for the companies to be able to monetize these games, you know, and as someone who plays it, like, I don't really care if someone wants to spend money to, what I care about is if people can spend money to give them a competitive advantage, I think that's annoying. But if people want to spend money to like change their jersey uniform and the company wants to find a way to make money off of that, yeah, so be it. Great.
He's a true gamer, bro. I mean, he said it. The iron law, as long as you can't pay to win, I'm fine with it. I don't really care.
I feel like that was a thing with the Call of Duty game I mentioned earlier. I feel like you could buy advancement or something. I remember being super annoyed by that, because I was like, I don't want to spend money to like get extra ranks. You know, I want to earn this.
Yeah, companies try to blur that line very thinly sometimes, regarding to like how much of an advantage you get by paying for something. And they've tried different strategies of, oh, you're not really paying for this, you're just kind of playing more for this currency. And it's like, no, I don't know. There have been situations where companies have been a bit sketch about it, but I think they've gotten enough backlash from the communities that they know that's like the number one thing about microtransactions is, as long as I can't pay to be better, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. But anything else, bro?
Just one more question. So last one is developers. Do you, whenever you look at a game or hear about a game, do you ever care about who the publisher or the developer is? Is that something like you pay a lot of attention to? Like, are you like, for example, Ubisoft games? Are you like, oh, I love playing Ubisoft games, or oh, I love playing 2K, not 2K game, yeah, 2K games, or things like that? Or do you typically just kind of, I guess maybe, sorry, this is probably a better way to ask this question. How do you hear about the games that you play? Is it just through like TV or through word of mouth? Like, how do you keep up with which games you may be interested in purchasing in the future?
Can I answer both questions? Because I actually have a comment on developers. Definitely. If I know the developer of a game, it's almost always a negative connotation.
Interesting.
And I think, you know, by word of mouth like, or on Twitter. You know, I respect people that play games, and I trust them with my opinion. So I'll go to Twitter and see what people are saying about something. And if they say it's trash, like, basically what I've learned from Twitter is that anything ever produced by Electronic Arts is trash.
Which, yeah. You know,
and I played that Star Wars Battlefront game and was very disappointed back in the day after playing those great ones when I was mm-hmm. younger. So anyway, so if I know the developer, it's probably negative. So it's really not a benefit to me. But, you know, that's not something I normally look for. As far as how I hear about games, I actually have no idea. One time I found out about a game because I was really bored and Stacy was out of town. And I looked on YouTube for videos of games that were like Civilization. And I found this one called Humankind. That was cool. So I bought it after watching the trailer.
Never even heard of it.
You know, no. I don't think it has a big following, but it was fun. One of those replayable games. Or I guess big franchises, you know, if Super Smash or Pokemon. Like I know to kind of look for those and people talk about them, but honestly, I can't tell you the last time I purchased a game that I didn't know about the franchise when I was like 10 or 12.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, what I learned from that is it seems like in video games, bad publicity is just bad publicity. Because, yeah, it seems like if you're hearing about something, it's loud enough that it's just negative, then it sticks more. Because it's not like, you know, I mean, it's just like the opposite of the saying. It's like, oh, any publicity is good publicity. I think with games, it might not be the case, because if a company has a bad reputation, like, I'm very unlikely to buy any games from EA, just because I just know anything they've produced before, I've not been a fan of. And if I spread that information a little bit too much, it might stick. So, yeah, that's really interesting to hear that if you know about a company from someone that doesn't like follow a lot of companies, if you know about it, it's negative. That's interesting to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. That's interesting. So, yeah, that's all the questions I had.
Okay, so there's been some news in the gaming verse recently, and it's more acquisition stuff. And Bruno and I, we have a lot of opinions when it comes to the gaming aspects of these acquisitions and these business deals. But as a financial advisor, someone that has a lot more experience with money, absurd amounts of money being transferred from one company to another, probably, than we do, we figured maybe you have a little bit of opinion, maybe nothing too crazy or too crazy specific on these recent acquisitions. So recently, Sony just acquired Bungie Entertainment for, what was it, 3.6, whatever, a lot of billions of dollars, $3.6 billion, I do believe. And also recently, we Brigham and I talked about this, the Microsoft acquisition of Activision Blizzard, which was, remind me what it was, Brigham?
Gosh. Yeah, was it 70 billion?
Yeah. Anyway.
Yes, it was, because it was 68 billion, 68.7 billion. Oh, yeah.
We'll just round up and say 70 billion. And yeah, we'd like to hear your thoughts on it, Alec. Like, we just heard recently that that acquisition is being investigated to see if it's legal, which I expected. Brigham was a bit surprised, and so was this article that he read. So what are your thoughts on it in terms of like business moves? And when you hear those kind of numbers, what do you think it means for those companies and the gaming industry in general?
Sure. Well, maybe I start with the Sony one. Crazy enough, $3.6 billion is really not, I mean, it's a lot, but it's really not that much on the balance sheet, which is crazy for, you know, to think if you had $3.6 billion, that would be life-changing, right? But for these companies, it's really just kind of a drop in the bucket. And one comment on the gaming industry in general, just from someone that I don't claim to be an expert by any means, but just, you know, rules of thumb and when you're looking to make investments, the gaming industry is notorious for having one and done products, right? So their whole line of business is to create a product that is enough for people to keep returning to these games and to be able to monetize it over a long period of time. And there's a half-life for games too, right? Some of them are popular for a long amount of time. Some of them are franchises and you can you know, release products on an annual basis that have a recurring stream of revenue. But for indie developers, you know, they're just throwing anything they can at the wall until something sticks and becomes popular before it even really becomes profitable. And as you guys know, it takes a lot of effort and a lot of different people to color in all the skins or all the pixels on, you know, on game development, and to do all the graphics and to make things look really nice and neat and up to the standards of what people expect. So anyway, long intro aside, this the next frontier that has been a buzzword is, I'm sure you guys have heard, is called the metaverse. And there was an interview done by the CEO of Epic Games not too long ago, who talked about how Fortnite was kind of the gateway. And I mean, of course he's saying this, right? Because he's the CEO of Epic Games. Was the gateway to the metaverse, which is a Ready Player One type environment where people are interacting in a virtual world and not having to leave and go outside, but going to concerts live in a virtual setting, going to the store and picking out clothes and building homes in a frontier that's just completely electronic, where people can be whoever they want to be and they're not bound by the way that they look or the way that they sound or, you know, whatever limitations they may have physically. And it's a real bet that people are making that there's going to be significant interest in kind of this low friction type of world. And gaming is kind of already halfway there, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, you see companies like Facebook completely rename themselves to something like Meta just to get on that train and the buzzword, and they're really trying to, you know, excite investors on new ideas when their products are starting to kind of taper off, right? People are sick of Facebook, you know, so why don't they pivot and move towards something more virtual? So again, second long tangent aside, you've got Sony, you know, buying a game developer with the hope that they're able to, one, have a developer with a track record of good product to put out there, so they have a recurring source of revenue whenever they do new releases, and two, you know, explore putting more of this into the virtual world. And they have more IP, they have more of a pull to come join Sony's metaverse as opposed to Microsoft's. And you already see that right now with streaming, right? Where you've got everyone having their own streaming platform and a fight for content because you can only watch The Mandalorian on Disney Plus, right? But you can only watch How I Met Your Mother on Paramount Plus. I don't know if that's right, but you catch the drift.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'll stop there. And I imagine that, you know, Microsoft's just that on a bigger scale where, you know, Activision Blizzard has not only just a couple of proven games, there are a serious franchise with lots of blockbuster games and lots of sources of recurring revenue. And I think it could be worth the money if it passes approval.
Yeah, that's a really interesting take. I never thought about it in that perspective of, you know, the metaverse can help change the way that a gaming company may look to investors. And that is the reason why so many of these companies are really just getting involved in the metaverse. Because when I think about metaverse, I'm like, oh, it's like World of Warcraft. You know what I mean? That's like every MMO where it's like there's a virtual world. I don't really think it's like a totally new concept. And so I've always been so confused why it's all of a sudden become like the biggest buzzword in tech. But that idea of it's like continual revenue and allowing people to continually be online, you know, it's an evolution from the games as a service, right? Like going from these single player campaign games to the games as a service like Halo or Call of Duty multiplayer, and then metaverse in a way just seems like the natural evolution of that idea. And that would make sense with Bungie, since I don't know if you heard about this, Herb, but Bungie did announce that the games that they make will continue to be multi-platform. So this isn't like an exclusive. I mean, I'm sure they'll make some game. Like I could see them making a Killzone game that's just for PlayStation, but Destiny and any other future Bungie game will be multi-platform. So it was confusing at first, but how it may interact with some sort of metaverse in the future makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, because I'm starting to agree with the idea that the next evolution in gaming and in content in general is VR. And I feel like that's the next frontier that we haven't really quite mastered. And when Ali brings in the metaverse conversation, it makes a lot more sense, because even Sony, they're really pushing for PlayStation VR 2 to be the next big step in terms of hardware for them. And they're also hoping that developers will take that step along with them, because one of our biggest complaints, Brigham, you and I, we have with VR is the content just isn't there. And I think it's just because developers just haven't really, really spent the time or the resources to make games for VR. And that might be the next step. And whenever I see these companies get acquired, I don't really think about the games. I think about the team and especially just the manpower. They're just throwing more money at a team of talented people. They're going to hire more talented people to move them towards the future. And yeah, like you said, I didn't really think about metaverse as their future, but now that we put that into context, I'm like, oh yeah, that is the final, not, I wouldn't say the final frontier, but the next frontier in gaming. And that's, yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. And we'll see if it pans out. Cause I would never think that $3 billion is not a lot of money, but I guess it's really not. Cause if companies are just throwing it around, like it's nothing, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I was going to say too, this isn't Sony's first time with a metaverse. Do you remember PlayStation Home?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember. I didn't have a PlayStation whenever that was out, so I don't know how big that was. But, you know, it's something that PlayStation did experiment before, and I wouldn't be surprised if they brought back PlayStation Home for PS5 when PSVR 2 comes out.
Yeah, it's ambitious. Like, the idea of Ready Player One sounds cool. I mean, would you be into that, Alec? Like, a Ready Player One type deal? Because there are things similar to that. It's just VR chat rooms. They're extremely primitive, and mostly just people just hurling slurs at each other, really. But
what is online playing in any game, but getting an 8-year-old yelling the F word at you, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny. For me, Ready Player One's almost more of a cautionary tale than it is as much to be excited about. But I will stop short of saying that it is the future. And the last thought I have on it is, as far as just opportunity for these companies, is esports. And can you imagine, you know, Microsoft buying Activision Blizzard? And correct me if I'm getting the developer or the company ownership wrong, but I believe that they are in control of Call of Duty, right?
Yes.
And if I'm wrong, let's just pretend that they are. And yeah, they are. In a world where, you know, you can virtually put on your virtual headset and you can be a spectator in a live game of Call of Duty where there are two teams playing against each other. And you can just walk around the map, see what people are doing. You can follow, almost like watching a Twitch stream, but you're walking around in VR, finding the person you want to be watching. And it's pay to enter, pay to watch. And it's something that is a reality in, you know, in the very near term that I think a lot of people are going to be interested in. And not to mention watching live sporting events from virtual reality.
Yeah, that's already a thing.
Watching, it is. Yeah. And but picture also the ability to hurl yourself into the court and, like, what, you know, having things that are able to project so that you in virtual reality can walk onto the court and watch someone dunk over you. I think that's a technological possibility. Pretty crazy. But
man, I didn't think this was going to turn into a conversation of the utopian future or dystopian.
I know, right?
How you look at it.
Sorry.
But, yeah.
Sorry about that. I'm thinking.
No, this is great. No, it's good. Is very fascinating. I mean, like we said, we're so tuned in to just like games, you know. Every once in a while, we'll look on the outside and see, oh, what developer did this game or what's going on with that company in the background. But it's interesting to see someone that's not as zeroed into just, oh, this gameplay is good or this story is good. And you have like a little bit more of a different perspective on the inner workings of a company, because that's not really something I think about too much. So yeah, it's definitely great to hear your perspective on it.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
unfortunately, they're the ones that are driving the decisions. You know, I feel like there's very little gamer input sometimes into how some of the best games come to pass, which I'm sure is a frustration you have.
That's a whole different podcast. We've had that podcast. It's called Cyberpunk 2077, where a company gets in the way of the game, and it does happen. And it's funny, Brigham, I don't know if you heard about this, the Harry Potter Legacy game that's probably going to be delayed. Rumors started swirling around. One of the lead developers said that they think it's going to be delayed. It needs more time in the oven, as they say. But then, like, I think a few days later, I think the CEO came out and said, no, it's right on track. That would make me happy. Exactly. That does not make me happy. When a developer says it's not ready, and then the CEO undermines the developer and says it will be ready on time, that makes me extremely nervous. Because then it's like, you're going to push it out before it's ready, and it's going to be awful. So, yeah, it happens.
Yeah, that's scary. Well, yeah, we will definitely have to talk about that on an episode in the future. But I think we're a little bit over today, so I think we'll go ahead and wrap up the interview. But I don't know if there's any last thoughts you had, Alec. Anything you wanted to share or plug? I know you don't have a podcast, but if you want to plug your shout outs.
I wish. Shout out to my wife / Brigham's sister, Stacy, who was listening from the other room. Hopefully I did not embarrass her. And shout out to Herb and Brigham for hosting a really fun podcast to be a part of. Hopefully I was an interesting guest. And if not, I'll at least enjoy listening to myself.
you were great. Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
Awesome. And
shedding some light on casual gaming, and also on, just from a financial perspective of these, like, these gaming acquisitions. It's super interesting to hear from your point of view, being, you know, someone who works in that, in the finance sector.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we got, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the show. Again, thanks to Alec for coming out. It was a great conversation. If you enjoyed the show, give us a follow on Twitter at BasementGaming9. And give us your thoughts and comments on this episode or any other episode. And of course, give us a follow on your podcast listening app of choice. Give us a rating, reviews, anything to get our algorithm going, you know? And with that being said, come back next time.
Peace.